Hello, and thank you for joining us on the All Things Protest podcast. I'm your host, Rob Sneckenberg, and with me today are my co-hosts, Olivia Lynch and Christian Curran. Our topic today is protests involving longstanding incumbents. Over the years, we've each been involved in procurements and protests where there was a longstanding incumbent. At times, we have represented the incumbent trying to maintain a contract and a recompete. At other times, we've represented offerors trying to break into a market and displace a longstanding incumbent. In litigating these types of cases, we've seen a number of themes and issues arise time and again. We also have a feel for which arguments tend to be more successful than others, and when it makes sense to make one argument over another. We'll talk today about four specific issues. First, what we call incumbentitis, when an incumbent is so confident in their ability to perform the contract that they perhaps lose sight of the solicitation's granular requirements. Second, some of the advantages of incumbent knowledge and how agencies occasionally try to level the playing field. Third, common issues that arise when drafting and evaluating technical proposals. And four, past performance considerations. Before we dive into these topics, though, we want to highlight two fundamental concepts that come out of the case law. These really lay the groundwork for the rest of the discussion. First, an offeror may possess unique information, advantages, and capabilities due to its prior experience under a government contract. And the government is not necessarily required to equalize competition to compensate for such an advantage. In fact, the case law often recognizes this as an incumbent advantage. That's okay. Yet, the second point that's equally important and seemingly opposite of the first is that just because a contractor is the incumbent does not necessarily mean that they alone are uniquely situated to win strengths, receive the highest ratings, or present the government with the best value solution. In each case, you have to look at the solicitation, look at the proposals, and see how offerors have responded to the government's requirements. With those two concepts in mind, let's turn to our four topics. Olivia, lead us off.
So we're starting with a scenario that is not all that common, but it's important to address as one of the most extreme forms of what we term incumbentitis, i.e. when you, the incumbent, believe that it's been your program, you're the only company able to do the work, and no one else can meet the requirements, and therefore you, as the incumbent, must win. This sounds extreme, but this type of belief is one that longtime incumbents sometimes fall into and have at times brought as their litigation strategy. We have not seen that this is a strategy that is effective. If the incumbent makes the challenge in response to the award to another contractor, the forum is likely going to dismiss that argument as an untimely challenge that the agency should have awarded the procurement on a sole source basis. In other words, this type of challenge would have had to be brought as a ground rules challenge. On the merits, if brought timely, this kind of argument is unlikely to have any legs. At base, federal procurements are about getting best value for taxpayer dollar. Christian, do you have any thoughts on that?
I think that's exactly right, Olivia. And as we'll talk about more below, incumbents that feel that they are really uniquely positioned and the only ones that perform the work in a situation like that are going to need to focus on their proposal and showing their true value, their true advantages as compared to the solicitation requirements, and really try to highlight that they are better than the rest of the field rather than simply relying on their incumbent status to prove that. So the second topic we're going to talk about revolves around incumbent knowledge. And in many cases, the incumbent is going to have some type of advantage from the fact that you're performing, your people are on the ground, you know the agency, you're familiar with systems, policies, procedures of the customer. This is commonly deemed a natural advantage of incumbency. Your acquired technical experience and functional knowledge that you've picked up over the course of the life of the contract. Now, the government is allowed to, but not required, to equalize this type of knowledge imbalance. The government is really only required to deal with a knowledge imbalance when the situation presents an unequal access to information OCI. One way the government can equalize a potential knowledge imbalance is to release information in a bidder's library to try and level the knowledge playing field. If there is a situation where performance of the incumbent contract allows the incumbent access to non-public, competitively sensitive information, the agency can deal with that in a number of ways. First, if it's recognized in advance, the agency can include an OCI clause in the incumbent contract that would prohibit the incumbent from participating in any recompete contract. Second, it can be dealt with at the solicitation phase for the recompete, where the agency speaks for the first time as to whether the incumbent will be allowed to bid. If the solicitation says that the incumbent cannot compete, then the incumbent would obviously have to file a protest at that point if it believes that its exclusion from the recompete is improper.
Hey, Christian, is that the case only with OCI clauses and OCI considerations from an incumbent contract and the specific follow-on for that incumbent contract? Or do we see exclusions like this relating to different contracts that might affect one another?
You could definitely see exclusions dealing with different contracts that may be affecting one another. For example, it's not uncommon for an agency to take a long-time contract vehicle that is comprised of a number of different functions and break those up into separate contract vehicles going forward. And that's one example of where you could have a similar problem. And the important thing for non-incumbents to remember is that under the Honeywell line of cases at GAO, where a protester is aware of facts giving rise to the potential for an OCI, and the protester has been advised by the agency that it considers the potential offeror eligible for award, it must protest the eligibility determination at that time. In other words, if the agency advises you that the incumbent is eligible to bid and you believe the incumbent has an OCI, you can't wait to litigate that protest post-award. You must bring it pre-award. So that covers some of the issues that arise with incumbent knowledge. And with that, Olivia is going to take it to the next step and talk about drafting and evaluating technical proposals.
So the first and most important thing we can say about the technical factor is that it is essential for everyone, but especially incumbents, to remember when drafting a technical proposal, what the agency is evaluating is the offeror's ability to perform the requirements under the solicitation on the basis of what is written in the four corners of the proposal. If an offeror goes in with the mantra, we are the incumbent, we are proven, we have shown how we perform the requirements on the incumbent contract, instead of actually addressing how it intends to perform the requirements in the solicitation, and remember, the requirements are not always 100% the same between an incumbent contract and a recompete, it's going to be very problematic. And we see this happen all the time. This isn't to say that an incumbent won't win with this type of proposal, but it is to say that you're not doing yourself or the agency any favors. And in a situation where you're the incumbent and you've drafted a technical proposal that focuses more on your experience than how you intend to perform, and you don't win having taken that approach, it's going to be an uphill battle to challenge the award to another offeror. Sometimes we'll hear from an unsuccessful incumbent offeror that the agency knows what they meant in the proposal because the agency knows how they currently perform on the contract. What we'll say about that argument is, while the agency is not generally prohibited from considering information it knows from the incumbent's performance, the agency is also not required to consider it. Outside of the limited context of the close at hand rule in the past performance factor, there's not really an argument to be made that the agency had to consider something that you can't put a proposal pin site on. Oftentimes, one aspect of the technical evaluation will be transition risk and/or retention of incumbent staff. You would think that the incumbent would be able to propose a solution with lower risk. And it's obviously the case that transition is different for incumbent and non-incumbent offerers. What we would say about this is that the agency oftentimes will award a strength or deem low risk an incumbent's transition strategy, which could be very hard for non-incumbent to challenge. But even with respect to transition, a strength or low risk finding is not necessarily guaranteed for an incumbent. It really does depend on the requirements, the solicitation evaluation criteria, and how the proposal addresses transition. If an incumbent merely says in its proposal that it is the incumbent and therefore re-awarding to them doesn't pose any risk, if the agency doesn't award a strength or the highest technical rating for that, it could be very hard to challenge that without anything more to cite to in the proposal.
That's exactly right, Olivia. And you just mentioned the importance of solicitation requirements and evaluation criteria, and that's something that often gets overlooked. All offerors, the incumbent included, should read the solicitation from the perspective of whether there is anything that favors or disfavors incumbents or non-incumbents. Procurements can be a battle, and they don't begin with the proposal. The terms of the solicitation will impact the evaluation and how well any one offeror will score. For example, if an experience requirement limits the types of experience that can be relied upon to contracts within that specific agency, And no one but the incumbent could receive the highest rating because they've held the most work with that agency for the past 5 years. You could try to push back if you're a non-incumbent. If other agencies require the exact same type of work, you could put in a Q&A about why the solicitation couldn't be opened up to allow reliance on other experience with those types of agencies. There's a lot of things that can be done at the solicitation level that often get overlooked, such as Q&A questions or interchanges with the agency at the draft RFP stage. So keep that in mind when you're getting ready to gear up for a procurement, that you really want to focus a lot of effort on making sure that the solicitation is advantageous to you and not overly advantageous to others. A final thing to note is that sometimes agencies try to level the playing field for non-incumbents, and they can wind up overcorrecting. So, for example, they could award strengths to non-incumbents for purposes of retaining 90% of the incumbent staff, but don't award a strength to the incumbent for proposing to retain that same staff. This is going to be treated as any other unequal treatment allegation would be. And if the agency is really not treating offerors equally in the evaluation, then that protest is likely to be sustained. Now, that's not to say that the incumbent can simply rely on being able to retain all of its qualified staff. For example, if a contract is split up and requirements change, you're going to need to propose to that change in requirements to show the agency that you can actually retain the staff or hire new staff for any new positions. So again, it's one of those natural advantages of incumbency that you don't want to let go too far if you're the incumbent, and make sure that you're actually responding to the solicitation requirements. And with that, Rob is going to take us to our last topic, past performance.
Yeah. And before I touch on past performance, the point that Christian just made is the one that I think we keep hitting on in this podcast, and the one that we need to hit on again, is really look at the solicitation, look at the specific requirements, and address those specific requirements. Whether you're the incumbent or whether you're a new offeror trying to break into the market, first and foremost in your mind has to be the solicitation and addressing what the agency needs. If you're the incumbent, you use your incumbent experience, your knowledge, all of those natural advantages that you have, and you channel those and specifically put them in your proposal in a way that addresses the solicitation requirements. But those solicitation requirements are what come first. Now, the fourth and final topic for today is past performance. And this is going to touch on a lot of the points before. It may be a little similar to experience and transition that we've covered, but it bears noting on its own merits. Oftentimes, incumbents will believe that they should receive the highest possible past performance rating simply because they perform the incumbent contract. And, a corollary, no other offer could reasonably receive the same rating because they didn't perform the incumbent contract. Well, what the case law really shows here is that it's going to be, again, within an agency's discretion to evaluate offers proposals against the solicitation. So the agency will have discretion to give the incumbent the highest rating if its past performance merits that rating. But the agency will also evaluate the incumbent's performance on other contracts, as well as how well they performed the incumbent and those other contracts. Likewise, the agency will evaluate a non-incumbent contractor's portfolio of contracts, and we'll see which of those are relevant and how they were performed, and how they impact the agency's assessment of whether that offeror can perform the contract. Either way, whatever the agency decides at the end of the day, whether that be to award the incumbent a high rating because it performed the incumbent contract well, or perhaps to give a non-incumbent a good or a less good rating depending on their contracts, it'll be hard to challenge simply by virtue of saying, oh, we did or did not perform the incumbent contract. It's going to come down to what your specific past performance portfolio shows and how well you perform those contracts and how relevant they are to the solicitation.
So, Rob and Olivia, it sounds like the bottom line to all of these points is that you need to spell it out. No matter what type of advantage you think you have as the incumbent, you need to propose to the specific terms of the solicitation at issue and make sure that you're highlighting your experience and not just relying on your status.
Exactly, Christian. And with that, that covers the topics that we're going to address today. We hope that these were helpful and hitting quickly a few important issues on protests and procurements involving incumbent contractors. That said, we would love to hear from you, our listeners, about your experiences with different procurement issues and what issues would be of interest to you for future podcasts. So please feel free to contact us at any time. In the meantime, that concludes today's episode of the All Things Protest podcast. And until next time, thanks for listening.
The All Things Protest podcast is presented by Kroll and Mooring and hosted by Olivia Lynch, Rob Sneckenberg, and Christian Curran. You can find the materials discussed today on Kroll.com or on our blog, The Government Contracts Legal Forum.